Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your hosts, Jim Person and Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, episode number 81. I'm Jim Person.
And I'm Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco. Welcome to the podcast.
The Knife Junkie Podcast, the place for knife newbies and knife junkies to learn about knives and knife collecting. This is our midweek supplemental edition of the podcast where we get to dive deep into some of the knife stories in the news. But also coming up this week, we have a first tool segment, and we'll also give a preview or give some dates of upcoming knife shows at the end of this month, as well as February and looking into March a little bit. So, Bob, a full show again this week on the supplemental.
Indeed. It's supplemental is always a good excuse to kind of wax poetic about the new knives that are coming out that I can't keep my eyes off or that I think are important.
Right.
Knife news.
Any new knives in your hands or future?
I have both new knives in my hands and new knives in my future. And I got the Launch 9, the Kershaw automatic, the little diminutive automatic last week, and it hasn't left my pocket in that time. I'll get to that in a second. What I did want to mention in terms of new knives, though, are new knives out on the market. And not quite out yet, but coming from We Knives and Todd Knife and Tool is the Root Kit, which is coming out. This new knife, the Root Kit, is so cool. It's got sort of the leaf-shaped blade of their most recent release, but it has, instead of that sort of wedge-shaped handle, it has a more contoured handle. It still has sort of the futuristic lines to it, milled in into the carbon fiber, but it just looks like an amazing kind of low-profile but sizable blade sort of carry. In any case, we talked about that a bit. Thursday Night Knives with Terrell, half of the design team of that, Terrell Todd, you know him as Zelric. And it's just a cool knife. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
That was last Thursday, January 23rd edition of Thursday Night Knives, which is the Knife Junkies live video show that you can see on both YouTube as well as the Knife Junkies Facebook page, where you can watch it on our website, thenifejunkie.com/live. And on that page, thenifejunkie.com/live, you'll also find an archive of the past shows. So if you happen to miss one, catch them right there on thenifejunkie.com website.
You're listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. And now here's the Knife Junkie with the Knife Life News.
As you know, this is SHOT Show season. And so a lot of knife makers are coming out with their new designs for 2020 and presenting them at SHOT Show. And a lot of that news is trickling back to our neck of the woods here. And there are, you know, I'm going to be talking about some of these new releases for weeks. But one that you know I'm very excited for is the new Emerson releases. And they're only coming out with two new knives in 2020. And they're actually an expansion of an existing line, the Sheepdog line. Those were the first knives that they came out with. There's a Bowie version and a drop point version. Those were the first Emersons to have a flipper, and I believe run on bearings. In any case, they were one of the first anyway. And so this is an Emerson knife that has three ways of opening it. Of course, you have the wave because it's an Emerson. You have the thumb disc, or you have the flipper. And what they're coming out with now is the Sheepdog Mini. And these are mini versions of the Sheepdog, as you may imagine. They've been reduced.
Hence the name.
Yeah, hence the name. They've been reduced in size to an overall of 7.1 inches. I believe they're 3.25-inch blades. And I'm sitting here, I'm staring at them, and I got to be totally honest, I'm a huge Emerson fan, as you know, never cared for the Sheepdog line. Something about the lines on them didn't agree with my eye, but I'm sitting here staring at the mini versions, and they are both the Bowie and the drop point are very compelling and look like awesome knives. And so maybe this will be how I dip my feet in the Sheepdog line. But yeah, so you know, the real unique selling proposition of these knives are the three opening features. Same steel, same G10, same setup as usual, same titanium liners, but just small.
Just less lines for you to look at. So maybe that's the reason you like it.
Yeah, maybe that. Sometimes, you know, you take a knife, you stretch it out, it looks weird, or you condense it, it looks weird. In this case, right. Condensing this knife made it look better, in my opinion. And okay. You know I'm just shallow and I care about looks.
You said it, not me. Speaking of SHOT Show, Kaiser, they also had some new releases.
Yep. Well, you know, last week we talked about a couple of new Kaisers. One of them with Lundquist, the new Lundquist. What was that called? The airfoil or the something having to do with airplanes. Now I forget. But
the mind is the first thing to go.
It is indeed. That went a while ago. But now that SHOT Show has begun, we're seeing everything that Kaiser's coming out with, and there are some pretty cool ones, and I just wanted to highlight a few of them. And the one that I think is getting the most press, because it was first up on the Knife News article, and this image seems to be going around, but it's the new Inversion by Dirk Pinkerton. Dirk Pinkerton is going to be coming on the podcast sometime in the near future. He's got some really great designs through Kaiser, and then others of his own custom shop. But this Inversion is really cool because it's kind of a Pikal style knife. It looks like the blade is put in the handle backwards. You have, if you just look at the handle, you have the sort of typical contours and curves you'd see on the spine of a modern tactical knife. You know, it kind of swells up and then there's a little dip for your thumb. And then on the posterior side, there's a big swell and then a groove. It just looks like a regular tactical knife, except the blade comes out of the top, and then suddenly you realize the handle is what's inverted. So when the subtly hawk-billed, beautifully worn-clipped blade pops out of this titanium frame lock flipper, and you hold it in the traditional manner with your finger in that finger groove, the edge will be up instead of down. And this facilitates certain ways of fighting. I mean, it's kind of like an edge-up Pikal style of fighting, or an edge-in. If you have it in reverse grip and you hold this knife, the handle in the natural manner, and you have it in reverse grip, well, the edge will be facing in. And that's useful in some, you know, very specific kind of trapping and knife fighting techniques that I know from Philippines. And I'm sure there are other reasons why that is practical. I just love it because it's a gorgeous knife. It's got this beautiful sort of stair-stepped milled pattern, and the blade is a knockout. But useful? Not so sure. But great for the design category in my collection.
Okay, so like it for aesthetics and looks and, you know, maybe how it feels, but for usefulness, low on the scale.
Well,
at least for the knife junkie.
Extremely useful in those knife fights I get in.
Oh, like, exactly, you know, yes.
On a weekly basis. So if I keep it on me, I'm sure
I've lost count.
So the theme this year with Kaiser seems to be dipping back into the stable and bringing back designers that they've had success with in the past and getting new knife designs from them, but also reaching out to some newer designers or other designers that they haven't worked with. Just going through the large list of new knives, I have to say, and this is just kind of my gut reaction, I do like Kaisers, and I have a few. I'm down to one, and then a Tangram. But I do like Kaisers, but they tend to start looking the same to me, kind of like Benchmades. Like, after a while, I can't keep them all straight, and they all kind of have a semi-unique titanium frame lock look. But after a while... So this selection is kind of hopelessly Kaiser to me. A lot of unique designs, but they're like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. There's this one, the Raja by Sebastian Irwan, that looks really cool. This is a standout design to me. It has a very angular Worncliffe blade, kind of in that scout style of, who's that custom maker that Alex T likes so much? Well, if you're listening to this, you probably know what I'm talking about. It's got a very angular blade, but it's got a very curvy, ergonomic-looking handle. So I like the juxtaposition of the curvy and the angular. So that looks like a winner. There's a knife that looks like a totally looks like a folding kitchen knife, aptly called the Slicer by Michael Galovic. That looks cool.
Good name.
Yeah, exactly. A bunch of others. There's one by a designer. They have four new knives by this designer, Azo, coming out. And one of them, called the Justice, looks just like the Big Leiter. It just sort of reminds me of the very, very popular Kaiser Big Leiter. So it looks like it might be sitting on the same shelf with that. There's another one that came out that I wrote WTF next to. and it's by a designer named Carlos Elstner. And it's a good-looking blade. This is not a, in any way am I impugning this design. But it's called the Assassin.
Oh, my.
And it's 3.15 inches. So to me, there are a couple of problems with this. First of all, you don't name a knife the Assassin. It's a, just a little bit like, and so, sir, yes, Judge, what were you carrying on that evening? I was carrying a pocket knife, sir. What's that for? It's for work, sir. What's that knife called? It's called the Assassin, sir. It just doesn't look good. So
the and it's name, only 3 inches.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's only 3 inches. So that Assassin's going to have to work hard.
Right.
You know, so, but anyway, Carlos Elstner did design a beautiful knife. I just take exception to the name. So that's pretty much it from Kaiser.
All right.
Don't get me wrong. There are tons of other knives, but those are the ones that really jumped out at me.
Well, maybe speaking about their design language, that a lot of them look similar or have the same style or whatever. Maybe that's intentional. Maybe they're good sellers, and so they want to kind of pattern other knives after them. Does that make sense?
You know what, Jim? It does make sense. And actually, I think they were guilty of that earlier on, maybe 4 years ago or so, 4 or 5 years ago. Now, I mean, legitimately, all of those knives look different. Some of them even have different handle material. But to me, the difference is predictably Kaiser. I look at it, I'm like, of course that's a Kaiser knife. If I had to guess, I'd probably say, yes, that is different, but it's different in a Kaiser kind of way.
Okay.
But, you know.
But there's nothing wrong with that, being able to kind of know who the maker is just by seeing certain things about it or styles or whatever. I mean, don't you do the same with some of your other knife brands?
Well, yeah, for sure. Actually, I cannot disagree with you on that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So the knife newbie is right.
He is. Mark it down, people.
That's right.
Tell your wife.
We'll move on quickly before you find some way to get out of that one. Hey, Cold Steel, you want to mention that one really briefly?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to mention that I've seen a number of videos. I've been talking Cold Steel to death because I'm so excited about their two new Crisp blades coming out, the Voyager XL and the Tylite 6-inch. But I've been seeing a lot of the Formax Scout online, especially Jimmy Slash and a couple of other people. I've seen it. A Cold Steel video itself with Andrew Demko on it. Anyway, as you know, the Formax is the beefiest folder on in the lineup over there at Cold Steel. There are plenty that are larger, but this is kind of the stoutest, if you will. And it's got a 4-inch blade, hence the name Formax. But in watching this video with Andrew Demko, I learned that the Max refers to the fact that it's a 4-inch blade, but you also get 4 inches of cutting edge. He doesn't waste space with a choil or any of that. And in order to make the knife that big, it's actually an 8010 XL, but it looks a little different because the 8010 handle, the sort of straight format, doesn't really work with the size of the blade. It starts to feel just weird. So he had to curve the handle. In any case, the 4Max is kind of an out of reach Cold Steel for many of us. It's a kind of a $350-ish blade. I think it varies between, you know, it varies. I think it might be less expensive at this point, but still kind of much for a Cold Steel, maybe many of us feel. And so this new one, the Scout version, comes in Aus 10 steel, which is a more budget-friendly steel. And it comes with, instead of titanium liners, it comes with stainless steel liners. And instead of G10, it comes with Grivery. So all of the materials remain as stout as the former materials, with the exception of the steel. You know, the steel isn't quite as good, but Aus 10 is a very tough steel, apparently. So all in all, you're getting the same capabilities from the regular Formax in a budget-friendly package. And I gotta say, the Formax I was always kind of on the fence about. But now I think I know for, you know, a third of the price of the original model, I could have this other one. So I think I might get the Scout version. It's looking it's looking like that might happen.
Okay. So on the list, but maybe not near the top of the list.
Yes. I'd say in the Cold Steel list, it's four or five.
Oh, wow.
The Cold Steel 2020.
Okay. Yeah.
Got to get the two Chris knives first and then the Saks. They have a cool, like, Viking Saks blade.
So. In addition to all the many other knives that are on your list.
Yes.
That,
all right. It's getting a little ridiculous.
And now that we're caught up with Knife Life News, let's hear more of the Knife Junkie podcast.
All right. Back on the Knife Junkie podcast, that was Knife Life News, but we teased it at the beginning of the show. Your Kershaw Launch 9 automatic knife that you've had for, what, a week now or so? Couple of weeks? And
I got it last week, and, you know, I can't carry it outside of the house. So when I've been at home.
And why is that, Bob?
Well, because of the law.
Oh. you're listening to the law now.
The law, yeah.
In your older age.
Yes, exactly. As I age out, I'm listening to the law.
And okay.
So when I come home, I grab the Launch 9 and it lives on my person. And it is such a sweet little blade. This is my first experience with the famed Launch series by Kershaw. It's their American-made automatic knives. They all have 154 cm blades and aluminum handles, and they're all out the side and have fantastic action. This one, this little Launch 9, I love the aesthetics. It's a beautiful little futuristic design, but the blade is small. It's about 2 inches long. And it's very thin, and then it's ground thin, and then it's got a fat edge, which means this thing is like a scalpel. And it's kind of shaped like a scalpel, actually, the blade. So it's just really has me excited about automatic knives and also about checking out more Kershaws of these Launch knives.
All right.
So I've had it for a week, and it hasn't left my pocket. And that made me wonder, what is the history of switchblades?
All right. Well, we'll get into that in just a second on our first tool segment, but I want to remind you to subscribe, if you're not already, to the Knife Junkie's YouTube channel. Go to thenifejunkie.com/YTsubscribe, thenifejunkie.com/YTsubscribe.
You're listening to the Knife Junkie podcast. Here's some cool knife history with the Knife Junkie's The First Tool.
So it turns out that switchblades kind of came into being in the mid-1800s in Europe. Primarily, it started in England, and there were some knife makers there trying to do a number of things, and one of those was bayonets that were spring-loaded. Could rifles benefit from having a spring-loaded bayonet? That, and also the marriage of spring-loaded knives and work knives started to arrive in Europe at that time. So at this time, switchblades kind of started developing a dual purpose in Europe. Sometimes they were used as worker tools for those who needed a knife, bring a blade to bear as quickly as possible. But others made in Italy and Spain were known for their sort of fancy embellishment on the handles and on the blades and on the bolsters, and then different mechanisms for firing them and for locking them. So born of this idea of a spring-loaded bayonet came these spring-loaded knives for both gentlemen and for workers. Just in looking through some material on this, I discovered that at one point in time, in the late 1800s, a word that was synonymous for switchblade was campobasso. And that was because in Campobasso, Italy, they were making these knives. And it just so happens that my grandmother is from Campobasso, Italy.
So it's kind of coincidence,
yeah. Cool thing to read. Maybe my knife junkiedom goes back further than I know.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You got it honestly.
So back here in the States, right after the Civil War, okay, mind you, these are just bullet points. There is a very rich and complex history of switchblades, but these are just bullet points of history in researching this that really kind of stuck out to me. And one thing that was especially cool is in the United States, after the Civil War, there were some pistol makers and some knife makers who were known for making pistols that had little switchblades at the end of them. So essentially, Yeah, bayonets on the end of the pistol.
Wow.
So, before repeaters were very popular, in case you run out of ammunition when you're shooting, you flip out that knife and you start stabbing, I presume. Either that or, you know, just like you and I, or just like I and other knife junkies, buy knives that aren't necessarily practical or aren't necessarily have any specific purpose, but we buy them for the cool design and for the show-off factor. Maybe back in the post-Civil War days, that's what guys did to show off. Hey, check out my pistol. Check this out. And then a switchblade comes out, you know.
Right.
So maybe they were thought of as kind of novelties then.
Interesting.
So at the end, 1892, a very familiar name to us, Schrade, that's George Schrade, knife maker in New York, starts the New York Push-Button Knife Company, producing automatic knives in a small shop, ironically, in where? New York City. So in the...
where you lived.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but it's like the most prohibitive place on earth for knives, at least in this country. And the Schrade Knife Company, which started as the New York Push-Button Knife Company, started in New York City. And so they were known for making a number of different knives. And at this time, a lot of American switchblades were designed like traditionals, like slip joints, you know, two-bladed knives, right? So there was an interesting mechanism used at that point. You know, these were not thought of as weapons. They were marketed to farmers and for, you know, outdoorsmen and such. And that's why they took on this sort of outdoorsy, you know, slip joint pattern. But you would press down on the pen blade, that's the smaller blade, and the larger blade would flick out. So I thought that was kind of a cool mechanism. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Great Eastern Cutlery come out with an automatic knife where the main blade pops out when you push down on the secondary one.
Well, I could see that that function being extremely useful for tradesmen and workers and, you know, carpenters and, you know, just anybody kind of working in the field or in the trades, as you would say. It's just such a time-saving little mechanism, little trick, you know.
Exactly. And think about it. Back then, there were no one-handed opening pocket knives. Spyderco hadn't invented the hole yet, you know, and the thumb stud hadn't been invented or the flipper. So if you were a tradesman and you were on a ladder and you were holding something up with one hand and needed to open your knife with the other hand, mm-hmm. having an automatic knife was damn valuable. So so that's where they took off. Right. Now, we're going to flash forward to the 30s. And at the onset of World War II, the Germans developed the Fallschirmjäger, which is a cool name.
I'm sure you've got it right. I'm not even going to
question that. Fallschirmjäger. I think Jäger means stag, you know, like
I thought it was beer.
Male deer.
Sorry. Well,
so they developed this switchblade for paratroopers. And it was in case they jump out of an airplane, they deploy their parachute, they fall all the way to earth only to land in a tree and they're hung up. So now they have a switchblade, they pull it out, they can cut themselves down. So it was a big hit, and the Americans decided, the American Armed Forces, the Army, the U.S. Army Air Force, needed, suddenly had a requirement for one of those too. Schrade put in a bid. They put out what was later known as their civilian model, the Presto, which looks like a single-bladed Barlow with a clip-point blade. So this was accepted by the U.S. Army, and it had the catchy name as Knife Pocket M2.
Sounds like the military.
Yeah, exactly. So that was issued to paratroopers and apparently OSS, Office of Strategic Service guys. That was the precursor of the CIA. So it kind of makes sense that they should have some cool automatic knife. And then after World War II, Italian stilettos became big in the United States. And that's what you and I know as switchblades. That's what I got my brother and father for Christmas that I was talking about, that very traditional switchblade look. It's got the quillions, it's got the long sort of bayonet ground blade, long and slender, and it's got the symmetrical handle. It kind of looks like the medieval assassination weapon, so they started calling them stilettos. But American GIs brought them back from Italy, and they became kind of fashionable among the less desirables, if you will. or at least that was the narrative put out by the media and the government. They did not take well to these knives. One or two news stories and it got blown up, kind of like today, you know, one or two news stories, it gets blown up and suddenly a politician finds a purpose and whips the constituency into a lather and something gets, you know, outlawed. In this case, it was switchblades. It was this guy, Jack Harrison Pollock, who was actually, he was a political operative, and he came out with an article in a popular women's magazine called Woman's Home Companion. And he wrote this incredible screed about the switchblade. But one of the things he said was, "Designed for violence, deadly as a revolver, that's the switchblade. The toys youngsters all over the country are taking up as a fad. Press the button on this new version of the pocket knife, and the blade darts out like a snake's tongue. Action against this killer could be taken now. To back up his charges," Pollock quoted an unnamed juvenile court judge as saying, "It's only a short step from carrying a switchblade to gang warfare."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, geez. And imagine you have no place else to go because it's 1954? And, you know, there's not much media, so you're reading whatever you get. And you read that, and you're like, oh my God. As Doug Ritter mentioned when we've had him on the show, a lot of these anti-knife laws came out of race hysteria, you know, like... Mm-hmm. It's the juvenile delinquents, the African Americans and the Latinos who are causing all this trouble. Hollywood did its part, coming out with Rebel Without a Cause, Blackboard Jungle, Crime in the Streets, 12 Angry Men, The Delinquents, High School Confidential, West Side Story, all these knives. I mean, all of these movies helped to vilify the switchblade. So a bunch of legislation came through. A lot of the knife industry, except for Schrade, kind of supported a lot of this stuff. And it was all in the excuse to stem gang violence in Chicago, of all places. Imagine that. The Switchblade Act of 1958. So anyway, that's how it all started. That's how it all became illegal. Thank God we have people like Doug Ritter and Knife Rights out there who have slowly but surely changed the majority of states' knife laws in this country. There are a couple of holdouts. New York State, ironically, is one of them, because this is where a lot of it started.
Right.
And there's a lot of knife industry in that state, and also Virginia, which is just backwards.
And that's this week's look at knife history with the First Tool. And now back to the Knife Junkie Podcast.
All right. Pretty cool history lesson there on the First Tool. And Bob, that's one of my favorite segments that we used to do a whole lot more that I'm hoping we can start doing some more because... I like that history and kind of learning some of the stuff about why things are, and especially with knives as I'm learning more here.
Yeah, yeah, me too. You know, you and I were talking recently about ancestry and how if you really think about it, you and I have ancestors that go back 3.5 billion years, you know, to the dawn of life on this planet. Literally, you can trace a line straight back. Well, when we look at the first tool and we talk about the history of knives, there is that same kind of lineage. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And then sooner or later, history is passed. And it's one straight line. Well, or it's one wavy line.
Right.
But it's all connected.
Yeah. Our podcast this week brought to you by G Suite. If you want to start running your business like a business and look like a business with a professional email address, start using G Suite for free for 14 days. Start that free trial by going to theknifejunkie.com/G Suite. That's G-S-U-I-T-E, theknifejunkie.com/G Suite. After you start that trial, email me, Jim, at theknifejunkie.com. I'll email you a special code so that you can save 20% off your first year of G Suite, either G Suite Personal, or which is called the Basic Plan, or G Suite Business Plan. The Basic starts at $6 a month, Business Plan just at $12 a month, but you're going to get like a whiteboard feature. You're going to get G Suite Keep, where you can organize and store your ideas. You're going to get slides for presentations, sheets for spreadsheets, docs for your documents, forms, Drive, secure file storage and sharing, and so much more. That's G Suite. Start your 14-day free trial by going to theknifejunkie.com/G Suite. Bob, as we start to get toward the end of the Knife Junkie podcast, one of the things we wanted to try to do is promote some of the knife shows coming up. So I'm going to get to that really quickly. This weekend, last of January, start of February, which happens to be a leap year this year, by the way, the Gator Cutlery Show, Friday, January 31st through Sunday, February 2nd. That's down in Lakeland, Florida. GatorCutlery.com is where you can get more information. A lot of February shows, including the Las Vegas Custom Knife Maker Show. That's Friday, February 28th through Sunday, March 1st. That's at the Westgate Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. That'd be a nice place to be in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. That's the major show in March, February. And then we look at March, where we're starting to kind of get back into the busier knife show season. So a lot of them going on in March. The Spirit of the Blade Custom Knife Show, March 6th and 7th. That's in Troy, Ohio. You got the Track Rock Hammer Inn, that's in Blairsville, Georgia. The Tar Heel Cutlery Club Show, that's March 20 through March 21st. That's a Friday and Saturday. That is in Hamptonville, North Carolina. Then we move to Arkansas, the Arkansas Knife Show, also Saturday, March 21st. That's at the State House Convention Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. Then we kind of go back down south for the Dalton, Georgia Knife Roadshow, Friday, March 27 to Saturday, March 28. That's in Dalton, Georgia. And then up to or out to Illinois, if you will, the Bunker Hill Knife Club Show, Friday and Saturday, March 27 and March 28. Again, in Godfrey, Illinois. And a note about that one, that's a new location for this year at the Altonwood River Sportsman Club in Godfrey. So a lot of great knife shows coming up as we're getting ready, coming off SHOT Show and kind of leading the road down to the Blade Show.
So, Jim, in SHOT Show season, I'm resolving to not get too excited about too many knives until they've been out for a while and I have a chance to have that cooling off period. Hmm. I think this year I'm going to be slightly more disciplined in my buying.
Okay. So you're still got that New Year's resolution and still kind of holding strong to it.
Yeah, yeah. I in spirit, I'm always there, but you know how things accumulate and then you have to purge. It's
right.
You know, it's just harder to do with these wonderful, wonderful devices.
Well, we'll maybe get an update on an upcoming supplemental show, maybe talk a little bit about some of the new knives you've bought as well as some of the recent ones you've sold as you can kind of continue on that reduce and refine mantra, if you will. So maybe something to come up. Hey, really quickly before we head out of here, tomorrow night, if you're listening to this podcast when it comes out on Wednesday, tomorrow, Thursday, January 30th, the Thursday Night Knives Show, which is the live show on YouTube and the Knife Junkies Facebook page. So don't miss that. And then this coming Sunday, February 2nd, it's going to be episode 82 of the Knife Junkie podcast. That's our weekend interview show. And Bob, another YouTube reviewer that you're going to have a chance to talk with.
Yeah, I got a chance to talk with Slicey Dicey, one of my new favorites from the last 2 years or so. And man, his channel has caught on like wildfire.
Good conversation. So look for that in your podcast feed on Sunday, February 2nd, if I can talk. All right. I think that's going to do it for our midweek supplemental. A lot of information here this week. Final word from the Knife Junkie, Bob, before we wrap it up here on episode number 81.
Keep them strapped.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to Bob at theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487 and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.